This is Yarena from Gwended, and you're listening to the Metal Pit Podcast.
Welcome to the Metal Pit Podcast. This is our year-end episode, so that we're going to talk about the year of metal in 2024. So this is a different episode than we usually do. So we're not talking about an album and we're not doing an interview, but I have a couple guests, two of the writers from the Metal Pit. We got Eric and John. How are you two guys today?
Good. I hope you're doing well. Hope you had a great holiday.
Hey there. I'm doing awesome. Hope all is well. Happy holidays.
Yes, we hope everybody had a good Christmas or whatever, and this, I guess we're going to be saying Happy New Year maybe now, because this will be out a couple of days. Well, this is Saturday. I don't know if I'll probably get this out today or Sunday, so it'll be the 28th or 29th, so Happy New Year to everybody. Thanks, everybody who's been listening all year to our podcast. And just a reminder, of course, visit our website, www.themetalpit.org, and visit us. Facebook and Instagram is at The Metal Pit. And for the podcast, you can go to themetalpitpodcast.com. And you can also follow the podcast on Facebook and Instagram, which is at The Metal Pit Podcast. And we have a YouTube channel, which is at The Metal Pit 666. And if you have any comments about the podcast or like to be a guest or album suggestion or whatever, email me podcast@themetalpit.org. So, and speaking of, I mentioned the website, and I'll say this at the start of the podcast in case people don't listen all the way through sometimes. We're looking for some new volunteer writers. So if anybody out there would like to review albums or maybe do some interviews with some bands, we get promos in early, so you'd have a chance to listen to some stuff early. We don't get everything, but we get a lot. So if you're interested in that, email me at info@themetalpit.org or just through the podcast email, whatever. And if you're interested, we can get you on board and figure it out. So anyway, okay, so now we're going to talk about the year 2024. First, do you guys want to just in general talk about the year? John, do you want to say anything in general about the year of metal in 2024?
I was really surprised just at the volume of albums that were released this year. And, you know, a lot of them were, again, for a lot of these third generation upcoming death metal bands, black metal bands and whatnot. I didn't think 2023 was going to be surpassed, just in terms of a lot of personal favorites of mine came out in 2023. But the bands that have released albums this year, bands like Necrot, 200 Stab Wounds, Blood Incantation, you know, have all just really, really impressed me with the albums that they released. I mean, there's just some really top quality stuff out there to listen to right now. And there's a lot of it. I mean, the volume of it just blows my mind.
Eric, do you have any thoughts on, I know you don't go to as many concerts or anything, but do you have any thoughts on the year in metal?
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's funny because I guess I'm probably the other side of the coin, you know, as far as like John's perspective on the last couple of years. Like last year, like a lot of bands that I followed didn't have new releases. So I kind of found myself listening to some older stuff or maybe something from like a few years back. This year, as I said before our podcast began, I noticed like quarters three and four, there were some really good albums that were dropped. So like this year has been pretty on fire for me as far as a lot of artists that I like. So I'm pretty stoked. I don't have a long list as I told you guys, but I feel pretty strongly about the seven albums that came out for that are on my list this year.
Okay, and yes, at the end of the podcast, I'm going to announce the Metal Pit's top 15 albums of 2024 as compiled by, you know, me, but from the writers on the pit that gave me some albums to choose from and stuff. So that's what that'll be. And Eric and John are both going to give a list of their favorite albums of 2024. Let's see. Tours. I was just going to mention, now I know I... I think I went to one concert this year, maybe, and I don't even remember who it was. Sorry. Because I went with somebody else. They wanted me to go, and it wasn't the kind of, it was mostly death metal. Actually, I think 200 Stab Wounds was there, I think. But sorry, but I don't really listen to that stuff. So I don't even remember who the hell it was. But anyway, let's see. John, you want to talk about some of your favorite concerts that you saw this year?
Yeah, sure. I went to six this year, which was down a little bit from 2023. Started off the year in February. The first one I went to was Vader for their 40th anniversary tour, which those guys, of course, being from across the pond, from being from Poland, you don't really get to see them much here in the States, at least not anymore. So I definitely wanted to jump on that. And as much as I love Vader, the real reason I even bought the ticket was for the opening act, which was Inhuman Condition. And that's the side project from Terry Butler, who was previously in Massacre, Six Feet Under. He's a pretty big dude in Florida death metal and has been since the early 90s. And they are probably my favorite band to see live. This was my second time seeing them, and they are just unreal. The energy level that they have is just phenomenal. They're a band, I think, that's really just built to see in the live set. You know, talk to a number of people about them, you know, and, you know, they'd be like, yeah, well, you know, we listened to the CD and yeah, it's all right. It's all right. You know, and then you go see them on stage and, you know, they come out and their front man, Jeremy Kling, is just he's just a natural front man. He's charismatic. He's energetic and he can jaw jack with the crowd with the best of them. And you're guaranteed to have a really, really good time whenever you see those guys live. I had actually hung out for a bit after the show and was lucky enough to meet all those guys. And again, we took a group picture with me and the guys after the show and everything, which was like really, really cool. And they're all super nice, super cool dudes. So that was definitely a highlight of the year. Sort of off the beaten path, I saw Galactic Empire, which is, yes, I'm a nerd. Sort of a cosplay thing where, you know, it's a heavy metal band, but they come out on stage dressed up like stormtroopers and Darth Vader, and they play all the they play metal versions of all the classic John Williams movie soundtracks.
Oh, that's so neat.
Yeah, you go there, you get the Star Wars theme and the Indiana Jones theme, and I think they did the one from Jurassic Park and stuff like that, but they do, you know, heavy metal versions of all of it. And it was cool because, you know, there's a lot of people there brought their kids there, you know, kids, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, whatever. And they come up to the front of the stage and the band's rocking out, you know, with the Imperial March with that dan, 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 you know. And, you know, after the songs, like they come up to the front of the stage, whereas, you know, most bands, like after a show, whatever, they throw out picks into the crowd. Well, they literally get down and they hand their picks to these little kids, you know, which totally makes their day, which is just
that's
really,
awesome.
Really cool. Yeah, I thought that was pretty neat. Saw High on Fire, which I had mentioned before, which is without a doubt the loudest show I've ever seen. But that was big for me because I'd been listening to them since about 2005 or so. So that was a very, very special show. My favorite for the year was probably Necrot. And like I was saying to Blake, I am, you know, a huge Necrot fanboy. So, I mean, I knew that was going to be something special, especially for them coming out of the West Coast for a change, which was nice. And I went down to Raleigh. It was the first show with my girlfriend that we had actually seen together. So it was special for that as well. And I was kind of concerned because I don't know if it was an issue with the venue or the sound engineer or whatever. The first three bands that played, like, you couldn't really hear the vocals at all. But thankfully, by the time Necrot came out, again, another three-piece, so I was kind of concerned about that. The vocals were dialed in. They sounded great. You know, you worry a little bit about a three-piece that the sound won't be quite as thick as it would if they have that extra guitar. Then it was just a non-issue. They sounded phenomenal. Their energy level was through the roof, and the crowd was rowdy all night. So that was a really, really great show. And then this last one I went to, I saw Frozen Soul with Gatecreeper, which was also another great high-energy show for all the metalheads, all the death metal fans out there. If you've never seen Frozen Soul, do yourself a favor and go. You're guaranteed a great time. You know, their energy
level.
I like
the name. I like the band name.
Yeah, I've actually got to meet two of those guys. I've seen them live twice. Once this past September and then once in 2023. And so I got to meet their front man, Chad Green, after the show. I've got to meet their guitar player, Chris Bonner, and just great, big, giant, friendly Texans. Just super sweet people, super nice. They're just as happy to see you as you are to see them. You know, and again, their energy level is great. They're constantly running around on stage. They're hard to get a picture of because they just don't stand still. But that makes for a good show in my mind. And then this very last one, I saw Suffocation. They played Greensboro. They did a series of two or three one-off shows. They had just wrapped up their tour with I Am Morbid. And they did two, I think maybe three one-off shows after that where they just headlined with local acts, one of which was in Greensboro that I saw. They did another one, I think, in Richmond and then possibly Silver Springs, if I'm not mistaken. And so I go to the venue. Funny story about this. I go to the venue, and the parking there sucks. I mean, I get a parking pass, but the lot's really, really tiny. So I always go there about an hour early. And then they got a pub called Freeman's, which is right across the street from Hangar 1819, the venue. And I'll go there, and I'll, you know, polish off a couple beers while I'm waiting for the doors to open. And I go in there, and the place is virtually empty, except Charlie and Ricky from Suffocation are sitting at the bar. And Derek, the bass player, and a woman who I believe is the band's photographer was sitting at a table next to the bar. So I come in, I'm naturally I'm wearing my Suffocation shirt, and they look up and they see me, and I see them, and they're like, "Hey!" So I ended up bullshitting with those guys for, you know, maybe about an hour before the show. They were nice enough to all to get pictures with me and everything like that, which I posted. Very cool, very sweet people, very affable, to use a big word. So yeah, I mean, it's just awesome. Like, you can't get that anywhere else in any other genre of music. You can't get that in any type of pop country or hip hop or anything, or even classic rock. You know, Neil Young's not going to be sitting at the pub before the show and get pictures with you. You know, it's just not going to happen. You know, so that's one of the things I think that makes our music and our scene so very, very special, you know, especially as a fanboy, you know, when these guys are, you know, just as happy to see you as you are to see them. So yeah, it was a great year for shows. I had a blast. I'm looking forward to, I've got three lined up already for next year, starting next month. So definitely excited. I apologize. I'm a little congested. I'm getting over a cold. So
that's okay.
If I'm getting a little scratchy, I apologize.
That's cool. Okay, Eric, I know you don't go to as many concerts, just like I don't go to as many concerts anymore, but you saw at least one that you wanted to talk about.
I did. So in April, I caught Joe Satriani and Steve Vai. They weren't able to wrangle up like a third guitarist. I actually had said G3 before we did the podcast, and I was like, wait a minute. Joe played longer, Vai played longer. I was like, it's not a bad thing at all. Those two guys are genius level. So that was quite a show. It was great to see. It had been a little while since I've seen Satriani. I don't miss him when he comes around. Vai, I did miss at the Birchmere the other last year. It was a weeknight, and weeknights are hard for me being an educator. I get up early working with the kids, but that show was awesome. And I felt like Joe and Vi both, they really balanced out their discography. I mean, they played a lot of some old stuff, kind of middle of the road, and then like some newer material. And those guys definitely brought a lot of energy. It still kind of baffles me how, and it's impressive at the same time, how Satriani plays with those sunglasses on the whole show. I'm like, I feel like it'd be a nuisance, you know, unless you're outdoors. Like many years ago, I played in like an outdoor party, and like the sun was a killer, so I put shades on. But I don't know how Satch does it, you know, the lights are shining down, they're pretty dark, and he's playing his guitar and just moving around, and he's well into his 60s and he's just jumping around, bobbing his head around. And Vi's like the most expressive guy, especially with the whammy bar. But he had a four neck guitar for, I don't know if you guys have the latest Vi, but the track Teeth of the Hydra, it's pretty absurd. He's like, he strums one neck, it sustains, it drones, similar to a sitar, and then he's playing another guitar, then he switches and plays like another neck. I'm like, this guy is, he's not of this earth, you know? But that was a really fun show. And I guess part of it for me too is like tickets these days are just so expensive for a lot of the shows. And yeah, it was one of those things where a buddy of mine kind of he picked up the tab for me. It was a birthday gift, and I was like, "Hey, you're way too generous." So I got him a beer, but anyway, the tickets were a little bit pricey, but it was well worth it. I mean, those two guys are you know bona fide superstars, you know, legends, and have influenced many other guitarists that I listen to this day, you know, mm-hmm. and they'll influence many more. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's one I wanted to go to that one, but I just never got to it. And Helloween was another one that came.
Yeah, they played up in Silver Spring. Yeah, that would have been a fun one.
I would have liked to see that one too.
Yeah.
And I guess Iron Maiden went through again. I didn't see it, but maybe I'll see the next one. I don't know. I've seen them like 10 times, but I probably maybe should see them once more before.
Yep. Well, that's it, Blake.
I die or they die or whatever.
Yeah. I was going to mention this real quick that like Iron Maiden, this is the first time I missed Iron Maiden probably since like the late 90s. I catch them every time they're in the DC area, whether it's Meriwether. Like I went to school, like the last day of school, I worked. I brought a change of clothes, put my Maiden t-shirt on, drove up to Columbia, Maryland. Traffic sucked, but I was like, hey, it's Maiden. None of my friends could go. I said, it's all right. It's Maiden. I'm happy going solo. And I was. Then I actually made a friend while I was up there. And we hung out, shot the breeze, had some drinks afterwards. It was a fun time. But yeah, I catch Maiden in D.C., Virginia, Maryland. But this time they played on like a Thursday night. I want to say it was like November 12th, but it was up in Silver Spring. So or actually, I think that one was at Baltimore, actually. So I was like, nah, I don't think this one's going to happen. Weeknight in Baltimore, that's like a double thumbs down. So I was like, damn it, I missed it. You know, Days of Future Past, I was really looking forward to it, but maybe next year. I know they're doing some festivals, but maybe next year.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned concert tickets. And yeah, for some of the bands like Iron Maiden, Metallica, whatever, they are, and I don't know about the Joe Satriani prices or Steve Vai ones.
There were plenty.
Yeah, they are more expensive, but then like the ones that John went to, they were probably just like what, 40 or 50 bucks a ticket usually? Because they're
not prices. Even. They're usually about 30 to 35.
Yeah. Wow.
I'll pay like an extra $12 to get a parking pass or whatever. And actually, I was going to mention that was Judas Priest played Charlotte last year. And I really wanted to go to the show until I saw the price of the tickets. You know, obviously it was in a much larger venue.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the nosebleeds were $150.
Ouch.
And then, you know, and all right, I'm not paying $150 for nosebleeds. You can kiss my ass. I don't care who's playing. And then beyond that, you know, I was going through ticket prices, the closer you got to the stage, they went from like $150 to $500 to $700. Now let's keep this in perspective. All right. My mortgage payment is only $500. Okay. So I'm not paying those kind of prices. Like, I'm sorry. I love Judas Priest. I would love to see them, but not at those prices.
Yeah. Wow. I don't, somebody was my over Christmas, I think it was my brother, but he was AC/DC or something. Was it AC/DC? I can't remember. It was either AC/DC or no, actually it wasn't even heavy. Well, if you call AC/DC, I call AC/DC heavy metal, old heavy metal. But anyway, it was Bruce Springsteen, I guess. But it doesn't matter if it's the same price, I'm sure, for AC/DC. But it was like $1,700 or something for two tickets up front or some fucking thing.
Oh, hell
like,
no. Yeah,
like you said, $150 or $200 for the nosebleeds. And he said, well, I'm not going to pay that when I can just sit at home and listen to the record. can't see them anyway, right? If you're that far away, I don't know how big this place was, but anyway, yeah. But so for these death metal shows or whatever shows that are at smaller clubs, the prices are good for the fans.
And it's great too, because at a smaller venue, you can get right up to the front of the stage and rock out with the band, you know, I mean.
Exactly. It's more intimate.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And you know, I'm always right up at the front, you know, especially if it's a band I really wanted to see. At the Suffocation show a couple weeks back, I was up at the front. I was standing literally right in front of bass player Derek Boyer, and he recognized me from the pub. And he in the mid song, he reached down, gave me a little fist bump in the middle of the song, which was really fucking awesome, you know. So I mean,
cool.
you know, festivals are great and, you know, large venues are great, you know, for seeing bands or whatever, yada, yada, yada. But you don't have that interaction with the band, you know,
It's
at
so
a
true.
larger venue that you do at a smaller venue. Like, I wouldn't trade a smaller venue for anything. Like, I
Yeah,
love
that's why I miss Jack's, because Jack's, I think they said the capacity was 500, which is probably a stretch. It was probably more like 350, 400, but they would sardine people in there, and I was lucky enough. I saw Pantera 91 at this place, and it was dinky. Well, yeah, the mosh pit was way out of control. A buddy of mine was crowd surfing. I saw Dream Theater there, and like I felt like a sardine, but like you'll have other bands that are like, I'm a fan of Symphony X. Symphony X came there for the first time, and there are people that came from PA. There was somebody that drove up from Florida, which is where they're from. I'm like, wow, that's freaking dedication. But yeah,
Oh,
like the
yeah.
smaller bands, like I saw Armored Saint at the Tally Ho in Leesburg. It's not a fun drive, but it's not Baltimore, you know, it's not Maryland. So, but I saw Armored Saint and Wasp together, and I mean, I love that show. I was super stoked to see Armored Saint because for whatever reason, I never had a chance to see him back in the day. So, and the tickets were not bad. I want to say the tickets are like 35, 37 bucks, you know?
I remember seeing their video for Rain of Fire on Headbangers Ball back in like
Nice.
1991, you know, and
Yes.
I was impressed. I always liked John's voice.
He's
I
great.
thought he was a far better vocalist for Anthrax than Joey was, and you know, I
Okay.
know that's blasphemous in some circles, but I
I
like
like
the
them
John
both.
Bush Anthrax.
I
Yeah,
like
I
them
mean,
both. Yeah.
but yeah, Armored Saint was killer. I mean, that takes me back a few years.
No doubt. They got started early 80s. Yep.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Now, do we have any? Let's see. I have a list of bands that are supposedly releasing albums in 2025, so we'll get to that in a second. But is there any disappointing things for you guys this year? Like maybe an album disappointed you, or a tour, or I don't know, anything. Anything,
John,
John?
John, fire away. I'll think it over.
The only one I can really think of was a performance. It was the first show I went to was Vader, and the opening act was Inhuman Condition. The second band was a band called Origin, a well-known technical death metal band, very proficient, just absolute virtuosos. The problem that I have is what they play doesn't necessarily translate well live. And the reason I say it is they play so fast and they use so much distortion that their sound, it sounds like just like a wall of mud. Like you really can't get that recorded digital quality sound. Not that you can anyway, really, in a venue, but with them, like what they do, and it's impressive. It is very impressive. I'm not knocking the band. It just doesn't play well live. You know, they're so fast and so aggressive, and they throw a boatload of notes at you. But with the distortion and the speed that they play with, it doesn't really sound good at all. It doesn't sound like much of anything, you know. And I know a lot of the hardcore death metal fans will probably crucify me for saying that, because they are very well respected and they're phenomenal musicians. It just doesn't sound good live, not to me anyway. But that was really the only disappointment I can think of off the top of my head throughout the
Okay.
year.
Eric, did you come up with anything? It's okay if you didn't.
You know what? Honestly, I was kind of like I was really glued to kind of like what John was kind of speaking at, and I was trying to think of an experience that I had before, but I haven't had it firsthand. But I've heard of some bands that are like, and like a guitar student of mine has said before. I can't remember the name, but he's more an extreme like death metal, definitely metalcore stuff like that, grindcore. But he was telling me about how technical a band was, and he played something by them, and I was impressed. I mean, it sounded literally like a Mike Varney, like some serious like 80s shredding. I mean, I was like Tony McAlpine-esque with a lot more aggressive, obviously double bass, super heavy, seven string guitar. But he said that it didn't translate very well live. So I'm kind of picturing, I think, what John is saying, and I think sometimes what happens is it's more with the distortion. It can be sometimes with the technical side of things too, which obviously, you know, like John did, I mean, I certainly recognize skill and talent. It doesn't always translate into a live setting, but especially when you have that gain jacked up, as soon as you had mentioned that, because I've seen some opening acts back at Jackson Springfield, where like one of the bands that was opening up for Nevermore several years back, love those guys. But one of the opening acts, they're a technical death metal band, but it was like so like muddy. That's the word that I kind of always kind of come back to. I'm like, well, I love the licks, the technicality is there. The band is ultra tight and heavy, but I was like, well, it's getting lost in translation because the gain, the distortion's too much. The volume arguably is probably a little bit too much. They're peaking and it's breaking up. So it doesn't sound good when you're out in the audience, you know?
Yeah. And I think to a degree, if, you know, there's a lot of bands, I think really my favorite bands to see live, at least in terms of death metal, are mostly mid-tempo bands. You know, because you get a much greater clarity of sound. And then when you get to that riff, you know, or that breakdown, you know, the crowd responds a lot better to it. And I think it's in part because you can hear it better. You know, and again, that's not to knock the musicianship of any band, because they've all got a hell of a lot more talent than I ever will. And a lot more dedication too. I'll be the first one to say it, you know, but to see a band like, I don't know that I would really want to see too many grindcore bands, because again, with the speed that they play at in combination with the amount of distortion that they use, I just don't think I would really get anything out of that show. Like, it would just be lost on me. Now to play it on to stream it or to play it on a CD, I know I'm old. That's a whole other story, because you can actually hear what they're doing. You know, it's a lot.
There's more clarity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, now I got so like I said, I got a list of some stuff that I know is happening in 2025. I'll mention this because I know Eric will like this, but on April 19th, Sabotage will play their first show in nearly 10 years. Woo-hoo! Of course, it's in Brazil. I don't know. Are you going? It's in Brazil, Eric. Are you going?
I'm not. I actually watched something yesterday on YouTube about Sabotage. I couldn't believe I watched it. It was 30 minutes long, but they showed the four tour dates and they're all overseas. So I was like, damn it. But go ahead, Blake.
Well, I'm sure they might expand because they're supposedly.
Give them time.
They're one of the bands that is supposedly working on a new album. Yeah, supposedly. Mm-hmm. let's see, what else are they gonna say? Of course, Iron Maiden will be doing their 50th anniversary tour next year, called Run for Your Lives Tour, and I'm sure that song will be played. and of course, they have a new drummer now. I don't have his name here, but they have a new, because Nico left the band, I'm assuming everybody knows that, but Nico retired, I guess I'll say. There was
that
no
stinks.
Way. He didn't get fired. He didn't quit. Actually, I think he's still a member of the band. He's just not touring. So I don't know if supposedly they're working on a new album. So I don't know if he's going to be on the album, or I don't know any of that stuff. But I just was mentioning that. And let's see. Slayer had a few reunion performances this year, I guess. They took 5 years off, and then they played a few festivals, Aftershock Festival, Riot Fest. Again, those would be in Europe. But Kerry King clarified that their reunion would not lead to a new album or extensive touring. And of course, Kerry King had a solo album out last year. Not sure if it made anybody's list, but it made number one on Rolling Stone magazine. I'm not sure how much Rolling Stone magazine knows about metal, but it was number one on their on their list. They probably just go, we know that name, Kerry King. I don't know, we'll see. Okay, so where's my list? Okay, so for February, I know in February we got new Dream Theater, which Eric's interested in. I am too, even though I haven't really listened to them that closely over the last few years, but Mike Partney's back in the band, so it'll be interesting to hear that one. There's two songs, I think, out right now, but I don't usually listen to singles, so I think I listened to one, and that's it. I don't think I listened to the other one. Other groups in February, we got Ginger. I don't know if any of us listen to them, but Lacuna Coil, Canadian thrash group Sacrifice is making an album, their sixth album. I think it's been like 20 or 25 years since they made an album.
Wow.
So they're making a new album. Killswitch Engage, Hyrax, I think, thrash band. I didn't even know they're still around, but apparently they're releasing a new album. And Udo, what's his name? Udo Dirk Schneider. former Accept singer. He's releasing a covers album, and I think it's called Balls to the Wall. So I'm assuming he's going to put that song on it soon. But and then in March, we got, let's see, Coheed and Cambria. Does anybody listen to them?
I don't. That's I gave them a chance. Yeah, they're kind of proggy, but not really my flavor. Yeah.
Okay, and Destruction. I think they're a classic thrash band, and Arch Enemy, of course, will have a new album. I think they already have four songs out for that one, and I like Arch Enemy, but I haven't listened to any of the songs. I like listening to albums, so I don't think I've even listened to anything yet. And then Adrian Smith and Richie Kotzen, they're making a new album too. It's coming out in March, and then, of course, Adrian Smith's from Iron Maiden. Right. I forget what group Richie Kotzen was in, but I didn't mind their other albums. I listened to them, and they're not too bad. They're not really heavy, of course. They're more hard rock and whatever.
Bluesy. Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
But anyway, so that's what's coming in February, March for sure that I know of. January, I didn't recognize any of the groups in January, so I just skipped January. Now, supposedly, this is according to Wikipedia, so don't complain to me if I'm wrong about this, but these are groups that it says are making, that are supposed to be making new albums that should be out in 2025. Anthrax, I think we did know that Anthrax is doing something. Mm-hmm. Armored Saint is supposedly working on a new one. Biohazard, Black Label Society, I didn't even know that was still a thing, but black metal band. Black Braid, I know John likes them, right?
Oh, yeah, Black Braid 3, absolutely. Yes.
And we got Doom Metal Candlemass, I guess they're making a new one. Clutch, wow, they're quite old. Corrosion of Conformity, and I guess Cradle of Filth, Death Angel, Disturbed, Exodus. Let's see, Five Finger Death Punch, which I don't know, let's do Hailstorm, Hatebreed is making a new album, The Haunted, Immolation, which John, I think that's one of your bands you like, right?
That is my band of choice.
Okay.
I didn't know they were, Steve, the drummer, had hinted to me that they were supposedly going to have new tunes coming out, but that's like all I could get out of him. He was very cryptic about it. So what'd you say, that was March?
No, these are just sometime in 2025, okay. So I got no dates for these things.
Awesome.
That they're making an album.
You just made my day.
Okay. And I guess Iron Maiden is going to have one. King Diamond, of course, has one coming. I don't have a date on that either. Machine Head is working on one. Manowar, I guess.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I didn't know they're... Megadeth is supposed to have a new one.
I'm a closet fan.
Let's see, Merciful Fate 2. I guess that would be, I would like to hear another amazing
I'm interested
Fate album. Metal Church is working on another one. Ministry, Michael Schenker, I guess. Possess, that's another death metal legend band, I guess. There's Sabotage, of course, which we mentioned. Slipknot, Spinal Tap. I don't know, it says Spinal Tap. I didn't know that was still going to be a thing, but maybe they're making a new movie or something. I don't know, but it says they're making a new album. Testament, Trouble, the doom metal band Trouble is supposedly making a new album. I know they have, well, I'll talk about them later. Tony Iommi is supposedly making a solo album, I guess. I don't know anything about it. That's all I know. Wasp, I don't know when's the last time Wasp had an album, but supposedly they're making one. And another thrash metal band, Whiplash. And also I read Down, you know, Down with
Phil Anselmo's band.
Or whatever. Supposedly they're making a new album too. But again, all these are just what it tells me on Wikipedia or what I read on other websites. So don't quote me and don't say, if Spinal Tap doesn't release a new album, don't yell at me because you didn't get a new Spinal Tap. And I like Spinal Tap. I'm not saying anything bad.
The speakers go to 12 on this next one.
Hopefully.
There we go.
But they're getting old. Like a lot of them are. Okay,
Hey, real quick, I feel like maybe they should do like a second Spinal Tap. You think about how many years have passed by and like how many generations have missed all the jokes and all the, you know, references and the rock and roll. And yeah, it'd be hilarious. I'd watch it. I'd go and watch it in the theater.
They could do a reunion tour. Spinal Tap reunion tour.
Tiny Stonehenge tour, part two.
Everybody needs money. So, yeah, they could do the tour and collect some cash.
Okay, I think that's all I have. Did you guys know anything else that you want to talk about that you're looking forward to in 2025? Maybe a tour you know you're going to go see?
Anthrax was the big one. So, like, well, Anthrax, because they initially, the bass player said they were originally going to release it this year, and I found that online. It wasn't Loudwire, but it was one of the other metal sites. But yeah, I'm definitely pumped about Anthrax. Obviously, Dream Theater, February 7th, Bring It On. I'm trying to think. Since I watched that, I told you guys before we started recording, I watched that Sabotage clip on YouTube. Lengthy clip, but it was informative. But Chris Caffrey said he doesn't know when they're going to release the album. They are targeting 2025. John Oliva's his health is kind of tough right now, but he does plan on trying to join some of the tour dates when his health allows him to. But he is going to record on the album. They just don't know when, but a lot of the music is already done, so that's pretty exciting. But yeah, I think that's about all I have right now. It makes sense for Maiden to go back in, and even if it's like a shorter album, which I guess with Steve Harris it's impossible, but with all those epic lengthy songs. But that's pretty cool. That's another reason to get excited about 2025, right?
Yeah,
Yeah,
and I also
yeah.
I forgot that Metallica is extending their 2-day tour thing also in 2025, so I might go see it. It might
I'd like
depend on
to, yeah.
prices as well, like we
Expensive,
mentioned, because I'm sure they're not cheap
yeah,
anymore to go
no.
see Metallica. And John, is there anything you wanted to say about 2025 coming up?
Yeah, there's quite a few things I'm looking forward to. As far as tours and concerts are concerned, I'm looking at Nile and 6 Feet Under are playing Greensboro next month. After that, Decapitated and Incantation are playing same venue, Greensboro. The one I'm really looking forward to concerts wise is going to be Cavalera and Necrot. It'll be cool to see the Cavalera boys. I've never seen Sepultura back in the day, so it'll be cool to see them perform songs from the first three albums. And like I said before, I'm a big time Necrot fanboy, so I've already seen them once, and I know they put on a damn good show. So looking forward to that. As far as albums are concerned, Inhuman Condition's got one coming out. I'm not sure of the release date, but I'm hoping for a tour with that as well, just because they're so great live. Stabbing, which is a death metal band out of Texas, they've got a new one in the works. Bridget Lynch, who is their vocalist, is one of my favorite death metal vocalists. Her vocals are on par with Dana Duffy from Mythic back in 1991. I mean, she's that good. So definitely looking forward to that. And there was a Soylent Green, who was a kind of a sort of a grindcore-esque band that I used to listen to back in the 90s and early 2000s. They played a couple of festivals this year, like Maryland Death Fest and I think Milwaukee Metal Fest. They've been split up forever. Their singer Ben is in Goat Whore, and Brian Patton is in a band called I Hate God. So I got really excited when they announced that they were playing these festival shows, and I haven't heard anything since, but I'm hoping they're going to come out with a new album and hopefully maybe do a subsequent US tour, which would be awesome. I don't know if that's going to come to fruition or not, but I'm kind of cautiously optimistic that it might. And then of course the Immolation news was the best thing I heard all day. So, I'm there, and they tour relentlessly. So if they tour anything for the new album like they did for the last one, I'll probably see them like another three or four times. So looking forward to that, definitely. Oh
Okay.
yeah, I'm catching Dream Theater in March, so I'm pretty stoked about that show.
There you go.
I
Nice.
might go see Dream Theater too. I'm not just not sure yet, but I've seen them about 10 times too, I think. But it's been a while because I never saw the other drummer. Oh no, I did see him. I did see that Dream Theater show. And it was one where they wouldn't let you take pictures with your phones. It was the first time I've been to a concert where they did
Oh,
that. Of course, I
okay.
took
Tool.
some.
So Tool
But
did that before. Yeah, Tool did that in 20, I think 2022, 2021, 2022. It was really odd. Yeah, it was like the lead singer's like anti-technology and like, what is going
well, I
on,
don't really
man?
know. I didn't hear anything about why, but it's
Yeah.
just, it would see us because I was sitting in the back because it was a smaller place.
Venue.
And I was sitting in the back row with my son, so I took some pictures because they can't see me. back. Of course, I'm not getting very good pictures with my phone, but I saw ushers going up. People were standing there taking pictures, and ushers were going over saying, no, you can't do that or whatever. So it's kind of weird. But I mean, I like it. I would rather not have people's phones up in the air when I'm trying to watch a concert. And that's why I did it. It was in the back row. I'm not bothering anybody. And so anyway, it was just interesting. So I don't know if they're doing that this year or whatever. But anyway, okay. So now we're going to get to our lists. John, is your voice okay to do your list first?
I'm a try like hell. Let's do it.
So you can do your list. You can do it in order or whatever you want to do.
Yeah, I'll do it in order. I did make a top 10 for this year. So for me, there was just, I had to narrow it down to 10. There was just so much stuff out there. I could have gone on with this for a while, but for number 10, there's a British band called Adorier, and the album's entitled Bleed on My Teeth. They're a lesser known band that I actually started listening to in 1997 with their second full-length album. They're kind of a black death metal sort of cross. They're not nearly as underproduced as a lot of death metal, but they're not as detuned, or excuse me, they're not as underproduced as a lot of black metal, but they're not quite as detuned as a lot of death metal. They're kind of bridge that gap. They're sort of like they remind me a little bit of Envenomed era Malevolent Creation, but their album is very fast, very tight, really, really ferocious. Definitely an enjoyable listen if you know you guys are into that sort of thing, which I know you're not, so I won't spend any more time on it. Number nine, there's a black metal band called Aklis. And again, I'm not too big of a black metal band, so I'm very picky. It's got to be something that really grabs my attention. This, again, it's another just high octane, high energy album, but it's also very atmospheric without being cheesy. And by that, I mean, they don't rely on a lot of synths and keyboards and violins and crap like that. It has a very dark, foreboding sound to the whole album. Very creepy, very good. For number eight, Skeletal Remains, Fragments of the Ageless. This album was initially in my top three. The problem is that it was released, I think, in March or April of this year, and so much great stuff came out afterwards that it actually fell really far on my list. For those of you who don't know, Skeletal Remains, they're kind of like the third generation's Morbid Angel. They're very similar stylistically. And if you know Morbid Angel, I probably don't need to explain a whole lot more on that. But they're tight, they're technical, they're a little bit weird, and it all fits together very, very well. For number seven, I've got Brodequin. Their album's Harbinger of Woe. They're a brutal death metal band out of Tennessee. And I think this could be the South's answer to Suffocation. They've got that tight jackhammers in your brain kind of sound to them. Very detuned, but still very groovy, very catchy. Excellent listen. I recommend it for everybody, all the death metal guys out there. Check it out. Number six, Deicide, Banished by Sin. And I know there's a lot of controversy about the AI artwork, yada, yada, yada. I don't care. The music's great. From a production standpoint, this is probably the best thing they've done since To Hell with God. I mean, it's an excellent album. The songs, again, are very, very catchy. And I go back to this one a lot. It's a short album. It's very focused. It's very enjoyable. And, you know, I think longtime fans should check it out. For number five, we got the new Nile album, The Underworld Awaits Us All. And I was pleasantly surprised at this, at just how stripped down and how mean this album is. You know, Nile's, of course, always been a technical death metal band with a lot of diverse instrumentation, a lot of Middle Eastern scales, you know, using a lot of things like sitars and lutes for interludes and different parts of their songs. And this is a much more back to basics approach with them. Like I said, it's a very, very raw. Like the production's crystal clear, but the music is it doesn't contain nearly as much filler as previous albums. Very, very surprised, very pleasantly surprised, I should say, at how great this one is. For number four, I've got High on Fire, their album Come with the Storm. And it's vintage High on Fire. Like I've described before, if Motorhead and Black Sabbath had a love child and maybe Celtic Frost wrote the lyrics, that's High on Fire. They're their own animal. They're not death metal. They're not hardcore. They're not motorcycle punk, but they're not doom. They are what they are. I think they're really the only band that really does what they do, and nobody does it better because there really ain't anything else out there quite like them. They're awesome, and I had the pleasure of seeing that show live. Coming in at number three, we've got Blood Incantation with Absolute Elsewhere. Blake, you knew I was going to mention this one. These guys, they're a whole other animal. They remind me somewhat of Nile, not in how they sound, but in how they combine different elements of extreme metal and make it work. Whereas Nile used the Middle Eastern and Mediterranean thing with their music, Blood Incantation kind of puts that spacey stoner rock and mathematical prog rock and death metal, and they throw it all in a blender and they make it work. And nobody's ever done this kind of stuff before, to my knowledge. And it sounds great. I mean, it's a killer album, just two songs, but they're broken down into three tablets each. And, roughly 45 minute album. And it's actually, interestingly enough, had made Time Magazine's top 20 albums of the year, which is unheard of for a death metal band. Come in at number seven, I believe. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing else like it, man. If you took King Crimson and Pink Floyd and Gorguts, and if you threw them in a blender, that you've got Blood Incantation. There's nothing else like it. So for my final two, number two is Nekrot, Lifeless Birth. And again, I am an unashamed Nekrot fanboy. I think this album is great. It has all the elements that I love about them, just the grooviness, the catchiness. You know, they'll be chugging along and they throw that little hook in there, and it's just, they're awesome. They're awesome. And there's something really, really special about those guys. Again, thrilled beyond words to have seen them live last year. And definitely looking forward to seeing them again in March. I can't say enough good things about that. That was a 10 out of 10. I reviewed that album. And that was my album of the year until I heard my number one album. And these guys were neck and neck all year long. But number one, I've got 200 Stab Wounds with Manual Manic Procedures. And to me, this is the perfect album. The production is crystal clear. The songwriting is cohesive. The musicianship is tight. It's focused. This could have been an album released in death metal's golden years of like 1992. Except the production's like 1,000 times better with modern equipment and whatnot. It reminds me somewhat of my album of the year for last year, which was Dying Fetus, Make Them Beg for Death, and the fact that it is just so cohesive. Everything flows, and it's unreal. It's an enjoyable listen. Again, it's a short album. I think it's like 29 minutes, but it's 29 minutes of some of the best death metal I've heard, and certainly I've heard this year. So yeah, shout out to those guys. I did actually get to see them live this year as well. Forgot to mention that. I got to meet Steve and Raymond. Cool dudes. Very, very awesome. Very nice. But yeah, that's my list. And 200 Stab Wounds, I think, really, it's a close race between that and the Nekrot album. But yeah, man, it's perfect. It is absolutely perfect in every way. So, yeah,
okay. Yeah, and John's our death metal guy, so that's why we got a lot of. I'm sure none of your albums are going to appear on Eric's list.
Because you Eric's are correct.
More of our prog metal, power metal kind of guy, right? I guess you'd say.
I would say, yeah, prog. I guess a little bit of power, maybe symphonic and classic hard rock metal, heavy metal. Yeah, you got it, Blake.
So,
yeah.
So give me your, you have seven albums, I think you want to say.
I've got seven. I'll keep it relatively short. The first one actually is really mellow. It's from Ray Alder and Jim Matthews from Fate's Warning. It's a side project called North Sea Echoes. The album's called Really Good, Terrible Things. It's much more, it's definitely more, I guess, melancholy, Some of it's, it's obviously some Hook centric, but it's definitely more chill. Even their Fates Warning was never like, their old stuff was, I guess, metal, you know, prog metal. They became a lot more melodic and like parallels and beyond. So this is even mellower, but it's really well done. I like it from beginning to end. Unmoved is a great tune. Throwing Stones has a very kind of artsy video. It's almost like pastels, but digitally. I came across it on YouTube and I was like, wow, this is like the music and the video, just they match one another perfectly. I don't know if that was Ray Alder's call or what, but it's a good album. I really like it a lot. Again, it's not something like it's definitely mellower for my taste. I have a major curveball for you guys at the very end, but this is definitely slower stuff, but it's very well done. And Ray Alder is one of my favorite vocalists. So it's an easy choice for me. These are unranked. I will say North Sea Echoes would be my top two or top three. Bruce Dickinson, The Mandrake Project. What more can you say about the Air Raid Siren from Iron Maiden? This album, when I listened to it, I feel like Blake had a similar opinions on this. Like it didn't like wow me, but I brought it back into my rotation probably over the summer, well, late summer, early fall. And I really like it now. It's just, I unfairly, and we're all guilty of this, I unfairly compared it to Accident of Birth, which is from like 1997, Chemical Weddings 98. So you're talking, 26, 27 years ago. Well, you know what? People change, musicians change. So obviously it's not going to sound like that. It's not going to be quite as, I guess, aggressive or electric, but there's definitely some quality material on there. The Resurrection Men's a really good tune, and it almost sounds like they have this kind of like this clean guitar. It's almost kind of like Western, but it's like, it's too rock. There's an acoustic guitar, but the drums and bass are moving, but it's almost kind of a Western vibe, but it's still rock. And in the rock, they definitely crank up the power chords, but it's like a different vibe to it. That's one that really stood out to me. The album overall is good. I would say it's like hard rock to heavy metal. I see that I didn't even put, yeah. Sonata, the last track is really creepy. It's not death metal, but it's super spooky. So I think, John, you would appreciate it. Yeah, there's definitely the lyrics. Yeah, he's talking about this dead forest. And I'm like, whoa, man, this is like the first stanza. I was like, this is getting a little heavy, a little bit dark, but it matches kind of the mood. And it really picks up. I want to say they play a baritone at the end of the song. It could be a detuned seven string. I own a seven string. Could be a detuned. It's pretty deep, but the riff's really cool. It's nice. It's real driving, but it's a far cry from the beginning of the song where it has this like synth part with like clean guitars. You're like, oh gosh, another ballad. Oh no, my friend, it is not another ballad. Give it some time. It's great. Nice. Yeah, I got. So here's one of my curveballs, I guess. 10 years. They hail from Tennessee. I would say they're more alternative, like hard rock, maybe. Something about the lead singer. He's just got a really good voice. The music is not, it's not technical at all. Like there isn't really much lead playing, but I like just the songs are pretty cohesive. They sound good. It's actually an EP. It's called Inner Darkness. But I really like it. I Remember It is super catchy. Oh my gosh. The Optimist is like their single. It's great. There was another one. I didn't write it down. There's one other one that has some more aggressive vocals on the choruses. It's not Textile, but it starts with the letter T. It's good too. Like I like that. It's an EP. It's newer. Came out, I want to say like 2 months ago. On to Flotsam and Jetsam, which I actually did a review for on the Metal Pit. Blake gave me the green light on that, so I got a sneak peek early and wrote a review, a glowing review, I might add. I've been a long time fan of these guys. I won't say every album has been a banger, but this one is really strong. I like their last three, to be honest with you, but I Am the Weapon is excellent. It's thrashy. Obviously AK's vocals, he doesn't do this super high stuff that he did in the 80s, but it's probably for the better. Because his vocals are like more mid-range. It fits the speed and the intensity of the music. I feel a little bit better. Kings of the Underworld is definitely one of the darker, thrasher songs. That's one of my favorite songs. Cold Steel Lights has a little bit of power metal slash classic metal in there with some speed metal. The Head of the Snake's an awesome song as well. I love the album from beginning to end. I would say it's a banger with some pretty nice lead guitar work. It's a good one from beginning to end. Category 7, we talked about John Bush a little bit earlier in Armor and Saint. This is a side project of his. The drummer, sorry, I don't know his name off the top of my head, but he's toured with Exodus, Slayer, I want to say Death Angel, but he's a hell of a drummer, and the guitar playing is, two guitar players are, I mean, it's like a shred fest. They describe it as kind of like Pantera meets kind of Eraser X. I could kind of see some of that comparison because they go nuts. I mean, there's some nice groovy riffs, some heavy riffs. I call it like hyperactive metal. It's like they're all over the place. There's like there are no ballads on here, nor there should be. But John Bush's voice is great. And like even like a guitar student of mine who likes death metal, he's like, hey, he's got a clean voice, but it's not too clean. I thought it was funny how he put that. But he does have that kind of raspy voice, but it fits Armored yep. Saint. It fits this Category 7. Like, he's the vocalist all the band members wanted. They waited for him. Okay, come along. And they're touring. They're playing up in Silver Spring, unfortunately. But that album, Category 7, it's the self-debut album. It's a gem, man. I love it. I like everything on it. White Flags and Bayonets is probably my top track. I love the title, too. But it's awesome. It's a great album. I would probably say, you know, I'll go ahead and go for my curveball. Then I'll go for my number one, I guess, if I have to choose one. I'm still getting into it, so it feels a little bit foreign for me to choose a number one. Because some of these albums, Blake knows this. I'm pretty anal about it. If I'm going to do a review or a podcast, probably more for a review, I have to listen to it like a minimum of like 20, 25 times, minimum. So like, when I listen to music, I don't shit around. I mean, I get into it, you know. I listen to it. I study the guitar work. I listen to it some more, you know, kind of get spinning in my head. And I'm singing some of the tunes, you know, in the drive to school or whatever, you know. But so here's my curveball. And I could get where some people would be turned off by this. But for me, as I explained to Blake, like in the early 2000s, maybe up to like 2000 to 2010, there was one point where I was just kind of stagnant, and I love the progressive metal. I love a lot of instrumental music too, but I was just kind of at a point where I just felt like, all right, I need to listen to something different. A buddy of mine burned me a Linkin Park album, and I was like, I hated these guys when they came out. but you know, like over time, I like some of their stuff. No, they're not one of my like top 10 bands or whatever, but for something a little bit different, and it's musicianships, you know, you're not going to like be blown away, but I think they write some pretty cohesive stuff. Yes, there's some rapping in it. I'm okay with it. I'm not a fan of rap, but I'm okay with it. But From Zero is a good album. I've only been listening to it for about a month or so, but you know, Emptiness Machine is super catchy. I didn't think they should have carried on initially, but Emily Armstrong was a good pickup. She's the other co-lead singer. It's kind of interesting to have the female vocalist in there with, you know, Mike does the rapping, but he actually has a pretty good voice too. Two-Faced is really good. It's pretty freaking heavy too. It's more groove, but super heavy distortion. You know, there's another one, IGYEIH. I Give You Everything I Had. It's a really good one. It's I wouldn't call it a banger because it's Linkin Park, but it's pretty in your face. And there's some language and there's some intensity, but I like the album. Again, they're not a top 10 band of mine, but it's a little bit off the beaten path for me. Blake knows I like classical music. I listen to soundtracks. I've been listening to Shogun lately. I know I need to see the series, but I've been listening to the soundtrack. Dune 2 is legendary. I mean, that's probably my favorite sci-fi movie ever. But that soundtrack is genius. Hans Zimmer is one of the best. But so I do kind of jump around, but metal is in my heart, man. You know, but I do like to mix it up here and there. So number one is one of my two favorite bands from Sweden, Evergrey. They have released not one, not two, not 10, but 14 albums. It's hard to freaking believe. So their latest album, Theories of Emptiness, appeared in my Spotify. I was like, I didn't realize they had a new album. Well, hey, since you follow Evergrey, hey, you're going to have a great day today. So I fired that up, listened to that in the morning with some coffee. I probably could have passed on the coffee. I know that's sacrilegious, but anyway, Theories of Emptiness has arguably some of their heaviest material, yet some of their catchiest material. So those guys, I don't really know how they do it, because ever since I've listened to them, they've pretty much always had, maybe not the first two albums, but they've always had detuned music before detuned music was a thing. So like they have like Recreation Day is tuned down to B, which is equivalent to a 7-string guitar. So that came out in what, like 2000, 2001. And they finally switched over to 7-string guitars, which made sense to me. Nothing, no problem with 6-string. I still play 6 strings as well. But I'm like, if you guys are tuning down this much, just pick up a 7 or even 8-string. So they've been playing 7 strings the last few years. And this album is excellent, man. I mean, they have a beautiful combination of absolute heaviness and riffs and grooves. The drumming is just sick as well. Great lead guitar playing by both guitarists. The keyboards fit. They don't overdo it. I love Dream Theater, but they don't really do too much. They have one song where they have like a keyboard solo, but otherwise it's more kind of fits the choruses. It's more of just kind of fitting where it needs to belong, you know, kind of fills in those crevices. But super catchy stuff too. If there's one song you go to YouTube or, you know, whatever music service you like, check out We Are the North. I don't know if you like these guys, John, but We Are the North does have a guest vocalist. There are some aggressive vocals. It fits the song. I normally don't like the super, super heavy, gravelly vocals, but this one has it. And oh, the riff is super punishing. Oh my goodness. It's the pauses in it. It's just, it just jacks you up. It's so great. But the album is, I do not skip a track. I love it. This is the album I'm going to listen to once Dream Theater's released in February, but I'll continue listening to it because I cannot get enough of Evergrey. These guys, dude, they don't disappoint. They actually did a great version. I was like, why do they have a song called Paranoid? Are they actually covering a Black Sabbath song? I was like, I feel like everybody's done it. Megadeth did a cool cover, and it seems like just so many bands have done it, but they did a version of it, and then they like add keyboards at one point, but then they do this, like, I don't know, this drum beat thing, like this breakdown. I'm like, who would have thought of this? And obviously the solos are sick. And, but yeah, those guys, Evergrey never disappoints. Those guys in Catatonia are like two, in my opinion. I know there's a lot of gems out in Sweden, and I know they're hardcore into the death metal scene, but those are my two favorite bands from Sweden, man. Evergrey and Catatonia. Just bliss, you know. I'll end it on that note. go check out Theories of Emptiness, though, everybody.
All right. Okay, before I give the Metal Pits top 15, I'm gonna do top 15, but I'm gonna kind of go kind of quick through it, because I don't listen to a whole lot of stuff myself since I do the podcast and I'm doing classic albums.
You're busy. You're busy, dude.
And I'm busy with the website. That's no excuse. Stuff, so whatever. But I do have one band. Has anybody heard of the band Metal Allegiance? Has anybody heard of them?
I don't think so.
Okay. No. Well, it features Alex Skolnick on guitar.
Okay.
From, of course, Testament. David Ellison on bass from Megadeth.
Megadeth, yeah.
Mike Portney on drums.
Mm.
And Mark Menji, who I'm not sure. It says he's on bass in the story, but you can't have two bass players. It doesn't make any sense. Huh. So he must be the singer, but I'm not sure what group he's from. But supposedly they're working on a new album too. And supposedly they already have two albums, but I've never heard of them before. But
I got to go check it out.
This, so awesome. Yeah, now Metal Allegiance. Wow. So maybe go check them out on Spotify. Supposedly they're working on a third album. I just came across that and thought I'd mention it. Okay, so yeah, I'm going to do the top 15. This is comprised by all the writers' choices, mixed up, whatever. So here we go. Number 15, I got Iotun and their album Kinship. This is a melodic death metal band from Denmark. It's only their second full-length album,
And that's so they're pretty new. So that's number 15. Number 14, we got High on Fire. And John already talked about them. So it's Cometh the Storm. It's their ninth studio album. And I don't think I had to mention anything else because John already did. Number 13, this is the only black metal album on here. And I'm going to guess that nobody, not too many people know them, but I have them. They're from Montreal, Quebec. They're called Spectral Wound. John, have you ever heard that name before?
I've heard the name, but I'm not familiar with anything that they've done.
Okay, well, it's their, which one is it? It's their fourth studio album, and it's called Songs of Blood and Mire, like Mire, I think that's how you pronounce that word.
Oh,
So
Meyer. Okay.
check them out. I had to get a Canadian band anyway. I guess I got two Canadian bands in here. Number 12 is Category 7, and of course, Eric just talked about them, so I don't really need to talk
Yes.
about them. Oh, I can mention that the drummer's name is Jason Bittner, who was in
He was an
Shadows,
overkill, wasn't
who is in Overkill and
he?
Shadows Fall.
Yeah.
And I guess the bassist is from, he used to be in Exodus, Jack Gibson. I don't recognize the name, but I guess he was in Exodus at one point. And of course, Phil Demmel used to be in Machine Head. Also, and of course, you mentioned John Bush. Number 11, we got Canadian power metal band Unleash the Archers and their album Fantoma. It was their sixth studio album, it's on Napalm Records. Check them out. See, number 10, got Judas Priest, and I don't know if Eric even got to listen to this album yet. I don't think
I need to listen to it. I need to
anyway,
listen to
Invincible Shield, I was on a lot of top whatever lists of the year, and it's like their highest peaking album ever.
Oh,
But
wow.
I'm sure that's just because it's Judas Priest, so people want to hear it. But anyway, it did pretty good, and of course they had a big tour there with Sabaton, I think, was opening up for them.
Yes.
But I think I only listened to it once. It takes me, I yeah, whatever. I didn't. It just like the Bruce Dickinson, it didn't grab me, so I didn't listen to it again. Just like
Yeah,
the
hey.
Saxon album, all these bands that I used to listen to in the 80s, I just, even like if Iron Maiden makes a new album, I'll listen to it once, but then I'll probably throw Hung Over the Beast right after or
There you
something.
go. Hey, Blake, real quick, I haven't heard Invincible Shield, but I did see the video and hear the song for Panic Attack, and I thought that was pretty solid. That's the first track on the album. Yeah.
Yeah,
That's
and
all.
Halford also did a duet with Dolly Parton this year, so I'm not sure it's too heavy, but anyway. Okay, and number 9, I got Lepros with Melodies of Atonement, the eighth studio album from this Norwegian progressive metal band, and it was released in August of this year, and it was recorded in Sweden. And I don't really know much about this. One of our writers did do an album review of this, though, and she's from Australia, but she did an album review of that because she really likes that band. Number 8, we got Necrot, Lifeless Birth, like John already mentioned, third studio album. Number 7, to please Eric, we got Evergrey with Theories of Emptiness, and like you said, their 14th studio album. And to please me, number 6, we got Legions of Doom, which is the debut album from the members of the group Trouble, which I really like, doom metal. They mixed in with some other guys, doom guys, because their singer passed away, so this is like a tribute album kind of to him. But I really like the album.
I gotta
It's
check that out.
but it's a good one. And like I said, and before, Trouble is supposedly making a new album, so it's like they're busy and whatever. Number 5, we got 200 Stab Wounds, and again, it's just their second album, right, John? Just their second album,
Their second full length.
full
They do have
length
a couple
album,
of
right?
EPs as well.
And that, of course,
And
is next.
supposedly they've got new music on the way this year, believe it or not.
Oh.
I just saw that on Facebook that they're working on something. I don't know if it's going to be a full length or an EP or not, but definitely excited about that. Those guys are awesome.
It's always nice when bands can not take 5 or 10 years between albums. Speaking of which, number 4 is Bruce Dickinson with his first album, his first solo album in 20 years. 2 decades. Tyranny of Souls was his last one in 2005, so 19 years, I guess, between albums. So the Mandrake Project, which of course Eric already mentioned. Number 3, I got let's see, where is this? I think it was a death metal band. Yes, death metal band from New Zealand, Ulcerate, with their album Cutting the Throat of God, which sounds very pleasant. And number
Most
two,
death
we
metal
got
albums are.
number two, we got Opeth. Anybody an Opeth fan here?
I
What's
got a friend
funny?
of mine who is. I don't
Yeah.
really care for them myself.
What's funny is I like the I've mentioned them to you before, Blake, many moons ago. But like, so I like the album I like is Damnation, but it's their clean album, so it's kind of more it's chill, but it's pretty spooky. They have some interesting ideas, just sometimes the vocals are a little too much for me. But yeah, I saw it's funny, it was recommended to me. I might give it a spin because it keeps getting recommended to me on Spotify.
Yeah, this just came out in November, I believe, and it's
Yeah.
called The Last Will and Testament. It's their 14th studio album. They're
That's
from
impressive.
Sweden. They started out, I think, as death metal, but then they worked into progressive metal, but they probably still mix in that death
Harsh
thing
vocals.
singing, whatever. And my number one album, I think you're going to know who this is, John, because I haven't mentioned him yet, and I told you I was going to. So it's Blood Incantation with their album Absolute Elsewhere. And like you said, their fourth studio album, and they mix whatever, Pink Floyd, like you said, with some death metal. And it's been number one on a lot of other sites' lists too. So it made our list, and I know you reviewed it and everything like that. And
It's an awesome album, man. It's not like anything else out there. Like, it's trippy
yes.
even by their standards.
And it's not your typical death metal, that's for sure. And there's only two songs on the album, isn't that right?
Yeah, just two
Yes.
songs. Like I said, they're split up into like three passages each. But yeah, I mean, they're breaking new ground, which is hard to do in death metal. I think there's only really been a few bands that have really done that, Nile being the one that comes to mind first and foremost. I think back to the early 90s with a band called Nocturnus from Florida, and they were the first death metal band that I know of that prominently featured keyboards in their music, which again was for a genre of music that is more bare bones and almost punk in its ethic. To actually add something like that was, at the time, unheard of. So Blood Incantation, I think, is kind of like that third generation, kind of following in those lines, following along those footsteps, to where they're not afraid to experiment, they're not afraid to break new ground. Their previous album to this one was called Time Wave Zero. It's not even a death metal album. There's no vocals on it, there's no guitars. It's entirely ambient soundscapes. So, they are their own animal, man. I think they deserve all the praise that they get right now because they're really pushing the genre forward. And they're starting on a headlining tour, I believe, this year. And there's going to be a time, when the fourth generation of extreme metal comes out, a lot of those guys are going to be pointing to Blood Incantation as their inspiration and their reason for doing what they do. So, I definitely give those guys a ton of props. It's a phenomenal album. It's not my album of the year, but it's top three and deservedly so. It's
Well, I
awesome,
think
man.
you got to be different. Like, you got to do something different. Like, because I'm sure this death metal, diehard death metal fans that don't like it because it is different.
Right.
But you got to do something. I mean, if you want to do it, of course, but you got to do it and be original and like step out of the bounds of just doing the same thing. Because I'm sure there's a lot of death metal bands where they're going to sound the same, right? If they just do the same thing all the time or whatever.
Oh, exactly. And I think
So
you get that in any genre of music. I mean, to me,
right.
pretty much all country sounds the same, I
Yes,
mean,
that's right.
you show me a country artist that's doing something different from everybody else, and
Yeah, and
go
that's why
ahead, I'll wait.
you see country groups now with rap in it or with metal in it because they're trying to do something different and not just be like everybody else, and that's what you got to do. You need some originality in here. So yeah, good on them and stuff and
I think it inspires new bands to be more creative too.
yeah.
I mean, whether you like it or you don't, at the very least, it's going to get those creative juices flowing, and you're going to think to yourself, okay, so what can I do with my band that nobody else is doing? So I think, from an inspirational standpoint, I think it's pretty awesome that they're doing this.
Yes. Okay, so there's our top 15 of the year. Now make sure if you want to criticize my list or our lists or whatever, leave your lists and try not to criticize too meanly if you put a comment somewhere. But anyway, that's their lists, and I didn't have my own list. I just did this list here. And again, thanks. Okay, thanks you two for joining me on this episode.
You've got it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Appreciate
Yes,
it, Blake. Yes,
podcast.
sir.
So happy New Year to everybody for listening. Thanks for listening. Our numbers are really going up lately, even though I missed a couple of weeks here at Christmas without an episode. But this is our last one of 2024, and we'll be back in 2025 with more classic albums, maybe some different things, like we mentioned before, where we'll pit a group's album against another group's album, maybe like an Iron Maiden album against a Judas Priest album, stuff like that, or a Metallica against
Versus
Megadeth, or
Megadeth.
something like that, whatever.
Yes.
We'll do some different things. We'll have some guests from bands,
Immolation.
hopefully.
Immolation.
Oh, and maybe John can give us some guests. You said that once about finding us some guests and get some guests from bands in here, interviews, all that kind of stuff. So we're going to sign off on this episode and say Happy New Year again. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next year.
Yes.